Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm delighted that you chose to be with me for this September 20th broadcast, 2020. We're going to be looking at sincerity. A lot of hypocrisy going on out there in this world with people. You can see it in almost every aspect of life. People saying one thing, doing another. And it's become a political issue, not an issue of what I would call virtue or nobility. So we're going to look at insincerity and three questions that were given to me, and I'm very grateful the last month or so. And if you ever want to write me with a question, I would love to have it. I would like your name and possibly where you're listening to me from, but if that's not okay with you, just your name will do. You can mail that to me or email that to me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire.org. Before we get into this, I want to, you know, have you think about a few little things. Sincerity. Do we and do you speak from a level of sincerity? And it's defined as a quality of being free from pretense or deceit or hypocrisy, unquestionable. And it's interesting about sincerity because we can be sincere about one thing in one moment and not so sincere about that same thing later on when we find out that maybe what we were sincere about wasn't sincere to us, you know? People change. People do things. We live in the confrontation of our senses, and we think that our senses are dictating to us what is true. How many times have you seen someone you thought you didn't like only to find out that you were wrong about the way they were and vice versa and had to change direction? Most people can't do that. Their self-righteousness meets their self-preservation and formulate a conviction inside a person that says if you're wrong, then you would be wrong about not only that issue that you were wrong about, but many others, and people can't handle that. It's just way over their pay grade to admit that they have been wrong. So here we go. This subject of sincerity, I think, is extremely important. I really do, because I think a lot of people live in the vacillation between sincerity and insincerity and are fooled by many things. And once they find out how fooled they've been, then they get cynical and rigid. And they don't want to change. They don't want to admit they've been wrong. They just go kind of blitzo on the subject and drop off the map. So let's look at some of the questions here. Maybe I can help you. The first one comes from Karen. She does not tell me where she lives. People tell me that they love me when I know that they don't. Why do people do this, Karen? Karen, people love us in proportion to how we either help them, provide for them, entertain them, maybe even genuinely go into sympathy with them. We have to have something that we have done or will do or have done that makes them believe that we care about them, want their highest good, or want to maybe make them feel better about themselves and yada yada yada. So people tell us that they love us when we know they don't. It's a social thing. People don't know what love is. Love, and really understanding the nature of love, is a lifelong process. It is not something you emotionally just drop on someone or just say for the sake of saying it to tell someone that they're special to you until they do something that is special to you. And it isn't maybe something that is beautiful or wonderful. So you got to see that for what that is. And what is that? Why is it so easy to say I love you but not live in the sincerity of that love? Because we're not clear. We have not worked on love. Love to us has been an emotional thing, something that we emotionally are akin to. And we get very involved in love in the sense of our emotionality. So as long as you are pleasuring someone, Karen, and you are telling them what they want to hear and how they want to hear it, they're going to love you. Oh, I love him or I love her. Why? Oh, because he entertains me, or he's funny, or she's funny, or she sympathizes with me. She can get down in the mud with me and roll around in self-pity with me and all that other stuff. Or maybe you admire some trait, or they admire some trait in you. Love, as I said, is a lifelong process. And to love someone or to tell them that they love another person, but you know that they don't, is typical. It's I hate to say it, it's the norm of living here on the planet. So don't be astonished at all of this. You have to ask yourself, why did I put so much weight, so much metal into what people think of me? I have a saying, nobody likes you anyway. I did a whole series on that, and you can see it on the website. No matter what you do, what you say, nobody likes you anyway. You can pleasure them, please them. They'll tell you to your face that they love you, that they couldn't live without you or whatever, and they're going to betray you. Absolutely. They don't have the metal inside. They don't have the ilk to love. Not at all. Only to look after what it is that they think is in their best interest. And that's about as far as it goes. I live by these premises with human beings, and it makes me laugh. Nobody likes you anyway. No good thing lasts long in this world. You can't teach a pig to sing because it wastes your time and annoys the pig. And no, and I mean absolutely no good deed goes unpunished in this world. Now, if you can understand those premises and you can use your humor in them, but also understand they are all true, then you can, as a person, love everyone, believe it or not. Because you see, they know not what they do. And just because a person knows not what they do doesn't mean that I have to hate them for that, or dislike them, or not love them. I love all my students. I do. I love each and every one for the way they are and what they are, but I don't depend on them to give me whatever it is that Greg thinks he needs. I understand their weaknesses, their faults, their traits. I understand them, and I know that they're going to fall to them all the time. They're not going to overcome them. They don't even know what they are, even though I have pointed them out to these people individually in session work. They're still not going to do it. Their ego, their emperor of all malice and hatred in them, will win supreme. And when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, if it's humility or pride, they're going to go with the pride. They are. They're just going to go with the pride. And I love testing people like this, and I do it often to see the ilk of someone. If I don't know them, I'll put something out there, make it appear to be true or whatever, just to see what they're going to do with it. And most of the time, 99 and 9/10 of the time, they fail. They do. And that's just human nature. And you've got to understand that, accept that, and not hold it against them. I don't hold it against them. So the antidote you have to have here, Karen, is not to hold people's weaknesses against themselves. You let them be what they need to be, and don't enter into their karma with them. by being insincere yourself or being cruel. I don't give people a piece of my mind because it wouldn't be worth giving. It really wouldn't, and it wouldn't benefit them nor myself. So I just quietly accept people the way they are. I don't seek vengeance. I'm not into my pride. I just look at things and realize everyone has their deal. Everyone has their shtick, their thing to do, and they need to do what they need to do. And if I'm wise and if I'm very kind inside and not cunning, I can see the way very clearly and do all I can to be of service to them, to the people, Karen, that you think are insincere. Let them be insincere, but don't hold it against them. That's the key. Never hold it against them. Live in the kindness of everything and let love above everything live through you. Don't worry about them and their fraud. Worry about your own. As Jesus said, don't be obsessed with the speck in your brother's eye while you and I have a beam in our own. I hope that helps you, Karen. Please forgive me. Namaste. I'm just hearing it. Well, it's not fair. Nothing in this world lives up to the fairness that we think is right. You've got to understand that. The equation of fair is always tipped in the favor of the person who is judging. So just look at people for the way they are and love them as they is. That's the way I look at it. And whatever they can't do, whatever they can do is what you give them. And sometimes they can take affection and kindness and sometimes they can't. The next one comes from Ray. He does not tell me where he lives. What is the ego? You often talk about it, but I'm not sure I understand that. What is this spiritual ego that you'd speak of at times in your commentaries? I really enjoy them, Ray. The ego is an interesting dilemma, as it is. It is the combination, it is what occurs, and it took me years to really have the direct experience of this. The ego is when self-righteousness meets self-aggrandizement, self-preservation, and they come together as aggrandizement, and they come together as a point of reference of identity. So when I identify with the process of my, shall we say, self-preservation through self-righteousness, always being right, that creates the emperor. And as the emperor inside me begins to grow and expand through speaking in my metaphoric ear, as it were, my inner life, and starts ruminating about my living and what's going on in my living and what my life is going to be all about and what it is and what it ain't. That starts the premise of the ego. And a spiritual ego you see in so many people. They think they know everything. They think they know what love is. They think they know what right is. They think they know what God and love happen to be, and they've made up some kind of story. They have a lot of superstitions too, and they get involved in that. And there's a lot of fear. Ooh, if you do this, then life will do that. And if you do this, the karma ain't good there. And they're always in that position with people where they're telling them how to live their life. And that's really an ugly place for us to be. But we do it anyway for the simple fact that we don't know any better. We don't live very well. Suzuki, one of my very favorite Zen masters, said, and it is an old Zen saying, only don't know. If you can do that, if you can live in the only don't know mentality and humble yourself to realize there are many things in this world and many aspects of your own awakening that don't fit the intellectual premise of our minds, and hence we don't know the effect that these things are going to have or how they're going to affect us, then you're in a very good place. You really are. But if you're living in accordance, in a cadence, even emotionally speaking, where you think you know, but you really don't know and pretend to know, then you do yourself a great deal of damage. The spiritual ego, boy, we see it all over the place. I know teachers who have huge spiritual egos. They've manifested their ego to tell other people what to do. They live in these fantasies about what is spiritual and what isn't. They have these fantasies about moral premise and a spiritual person and what they do and what they don't do. I hear it. I see it all the time on the internet. I'm not going to mention names, but they're the ones that sell the most books and have the biggest, what do we want to say, media light on them. It is awful. You know, real inner work is just nitty gritty, difficult work that seems to the average person who is greedy and of the pedestrian mentality to have no worth at all. It doesn't benefit anything. Real inner work is gut-wrenching. And when I see people say to me or hear them say to me, oh, I'm a spiritual teacher, I want to be, and I realize they don't have the oak, they don't have the dedication, they don't have the inner volume, as it were, spiritually speaking, to understand all of that, I just laugh. But actually, they are rewarded, these kinds of people, because that's what people want. The things that people can hear that are of the ilk of great love and great spirituality, great change, is very small. And most people don't have that ilk. They can't hear it without being insulted. And this is why Jesus said, blessed is he who is not offended in me. He taught a lot of things that were deeply offensive to the common mind, to the pedestrian mentality. Unless you hate your mother, your father, your brother, your life, blah, blah, you cannot be my disciple. Just all of that, the misunderstanding of the Beatitudes. There's so many things he said. Man wanted to follow him, and he said, I'll follow you, but first let me go home and bury my father. And Jesus says, let the dead bury their dead. You know, come and follow me. The man didn't. These are very, very pungent statements that he makes. Buddha did the same thing. Inner work is not for sissies. It just isn't. And the spiritual ego tries to, you know, smooth it all over and make it politically correct and cleanse it. It doesn't work, because then you can't mature. It takes real guts and real maturity, real insight, real push inside to awaken. And for many people in this world, we have people who are nearing that line, and that's as far as they'll go. We have people who are on the line of spiritual awakening, and that's as far as they will go. And then there are those very rare, very, very, very rare, who will cross over the line into the way. So what is the spiritual ego and what is the stuff? It is based on the ilk of a person, their tendencies, what they're willing to sacrifice, what they're willing to give beyond the concept of conventional thinking and mind. So that's where it's at. And I hope that one day, Ray, you'll be a part of that in some way or another in your life. But it's a difficult road to haul, and not many people can do it. That is the truth. It's good to be around someone who is like that, because eventually, it sinks in. I think that's what happened to me. I was hanging around the quote-unquote right people, and it eventually sunk in. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question comes from John. He does not tell me where he lives. How does one become sincere for the practice? Jesus once said, "He who humbles himself shall be exalted, and those who don't shall be humbled." There's another statement he made that doesn't fit well with our society. How does one have sincerity for the practice? That's a very interesting thing. It all depends on the person, but I can tell you from my experience what it is. You have to have had enough from the futility of your ego. Once your real teacher, which is futility, starts to mount up in you, once you realize you've done this over and over and over and over again to nauseam, how you may have lived over and over and over again in right and wrong and good and bad, in what you thought was moral and immoral, once you've realized that lifetime after lifetime you have lived, exhausting yourself, seeking comfort, security, happiness, even love. Once you realize all of that and you see the looniness of it going around and around and around like a dog chasing its own tail, that's when it suddenly happens. You realize, I've got to stop this crazy fantasy of mine. I've got to stop, and I want to see what this is all about. You have to recognize that there is an ultimate intelligence in this lifetime, in this world. This intelligence is not emotional. It is not psychological. It is not parental. This whole thing that I'm talking about here, this intelligence does not have a persona. So without a persona and without some kind of humanistic belief about this intelligence, do we enter into an authentic spiritual practice? You've got to be willing to give up everything for the sake of a love that is everything. But very few people have the ilk to do this, nor the intent, because their lives are too complicated in the human. You get married, you have kids, you do all of that crazy stuff, and then you have to wonder inside yourself, what is going on? Your life is wrapped up in people and obligations and not in the practice of awakening, freeing yourself. You can't do it when you have human obligations and you're constantly being bombarded by them, and what you have to do in order to fulfill your obligations to your children, your family, your wife, your husband, whatever, and you miss the whole experience of life due to being obligated. It's a very difficult thing for human beings to do, and very few of them can do it. How do you have sincerity for the practice? How do you get into that? You have to see the futility of your life, and that this futility will go on and on and on until you break it. I'm out of here. I hope that helped you. Thank you, John, for your question. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.